Friday on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 fan Justin and Ailish. We made it to the end of the week, and our reward was a night off.
It was nice.
What'd
it
you do?
Was nice.
Did you get us anything fun?
Did I?
The answer is probably no. You put your sleep tape on your mouth, and you went bye-bye.
I set myself up for a weekend where I'm not scrambling for sleep in order to be a human for other things.
It's pretty good.
So pretty good. I'm happy about it.
Good forward thinking.
What did you shut it down early, or did you like have a million things to do?
You know, I always have a million things to do, but I did sneak in a episode 5 of White Lotus season 2.
Oh, just chipping away at that, eh?
Wow.
Chipping away.
The cliffhanger on the end of that one.
You can say it now.
No, forever. I can't say this one. I can't say this one.
Oh, you actually can't say this one. Yeah, there are a couple moments in that that are a little not safe for
I'm just trying to get it done.
Early morning radio.
So then I can rewatch Succession.
Rewatch Succession?
Just maybe last season.
As preparation for...
In preparation for this finale.
March 26th, I
believe.
Yeah,
we're running out of time here, so I'm trying to grind through, finish that.
I feel like that's a tough rewatch.
Why?
It's honestly a tough show to watch.
Yeah, but I would rather that than a show that I can watch while I'm doing the dishes or, like, you know, cleaning. It's like, oh, what?
Would you, though? You're the person who
sometimes it's on in the background.
The Office has just white noise.
So if I want a show that I got to sit down and really, like, invest in, that's Succession. So I want to get ready for when it comes out in a couple weeks.
It is just a couple weeks.
That was it, though.
It's tough to, like... watch television at normal times doing this job because there's something else generally.
I ended up putting on any NHL game was on last night. I watched that 10-4 Sabres defeat.
Did you watch that?
Yeah. The final, like after I finished my
hell
episode.
Hell of a call on the over for that.
Oh, yeah.
Not bad.
Lock of the century.
Not bad.
That third period hit the over. Anyway, yeah.
With Succession, I'm going to try my best to watch that every Sunday. Like, it's
that's
the one I want to prioritize.
I want to be in that world with everyone else. I've mm-hmm. never been a live viewing experience with, the community of TV people.
No?
I caught up. This is gross. I caught up on Game of Thrones in time for the finale, and I had never watched Game of Thrones.
In time for the finale or the final season?
The final episode.
Okay. You grinded
hard to
get there.
How many seasons of Game of Thrones are there? Because I did it in...
6 or 7?
I did it in...
5, 6, 7?
The quarantine months of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I got all of them in time to catch up to watch it live with everyone. And what a disappointment that was.
Well, that's... There's eight seasons. Wow.
I don't even want to give you the time frame that I watched them all in, but it was pretty sad.
Hey, man, it's the pandemic.
But I wanted to be a part of that. That's a moment. Like, everybody's watching that.
I still think it paid off because you were in on everyone's anger.
That's true.
Either way, like, if it's good or bad, at least there's some emotion with it.
But my goal is also to do that with Succession. Everyone right now is watching that Last of Us, and I'm jealous because every Sunday they're like, Last of Us left me just, like, and they put this meme up, and I'm like, what does that mean?
The problem is it's a movie every Sunday night. Like, with at least with Succession, I think you can lock yourself into... 50 minutes, under an hour, but I watched one of The Last of Us, and it was like 100 minutes long. It was a full-on movie, and it was great. I enjoyed it, but I can't be doing that Sunday nights.
Well,
I can't.
We'll try to get in for the Succession viewing experience together.
Speaking of you doing something when it's an off night, a nice little article about you in The Athletic yesterday. Can we talk about that for a moment?
I think we're allowed to.
Of course we're allowed to.
Yeah, we're like allowed to, but...
How many times did you have the chance to open it and you just like, oh, I'll do that later? Because you were all like, I don't know if I want to read it. You're being modest. You're being like Joel Damon. We'll get to that in a second.
Yes. You never really know like what the response is going to be. So Sean Fitzgerald from The Athletic and I sat down last week. It was really nice to chat. We went to Rooster or we went to the coffee shop across the street.
You can do Rooster.
And we just chatted about the balancing of my job with the Maple Leafs and my job here at the Fan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good perspective because we do talk about how that sometimes can be the way you to set yourself apart in the industry. And obviously I took on a big commitment and it was kind of crazy and it is still, you know, our lives are already crazy in the shop. So it's really nice. I think he did a really great job at pointing out the points. Also, you're in it. He talked to my brother. He talked to a few other people in the industry, which was nice. So mm-hmm. I didn't know it was going to be that, you know, full circle.
Oh, it was Big J. Okay. A lot of sources.
It was really lovely. So if you get a chance and you subscribe to The Athletic, then you can take a look. Sean Fitzgerald, it's called How and Why Ailish Forfar Balanced Her Job at The Fan with In-Arena Hosting. And there's a couple of nice comments of listeners, and I appreciate that very much. I was worried. That's why I was like, I don't want to open it.
Was it the comments you were worried about?
I don't know. Just like someone writing about you, like, I don't really.
It is. I mean, I've never had that happen before. Well, it is probably a little bit of a weird experience.
For sure. And
oh, yeah, you've had multiple. You've lived this life forever.
Justin, like, I don't know. Like, you sit down with to talk about, you know, the struggles and like or the balancing of something, and I just wanted to make sure I didn't come off like, I don't know. You just never know how you're going to come off.
Okay.
Not that I don't trust Sean, but reading an article about yourself is like, yeah, I'm sick.
No, it's not on your fridge right
no,
now?
No, like, can you
do that anymore?
Silly.
Like, you print something out at The Athletic and put it on your fridge? It doesn't, it hits different now.
But it was nice to read some nice comments from our listeners, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
What would you rather read about yourself doing? Athletic competition or now your new
100% athletic competition.
Really? I feel like people are more mean.
That's fine. That's performance
that.
Like on the ice. I can like I know if I'm
so if you'd cost your team a game
you
and it was written out there.
No problem.
You just because you
hold
know
accountability to that.
Wow.
But when someone's like telling your life story, it just
you can tell a life story in a sports article.
You can. But I would rather you write about like my on-ice performance than me as a human.
I was a little nervous, too, because he got me talking that Sean Fitzgerald.
He's a good journalist.
I'm like, did I say too much?
I was spilling
here?
Beans about you. I'm like, oh, God, don't put that in.
I was definitely saying too much. And then by the end, he's like, off the record. I'm like, I thought the last 5 minutes has been off the record.
What were you saying?
I know. We were just talking. You're talking
about
the industry.
You're talking smack about me.
And I'm like, I may have said too much. But luckily,
no,
it's just
great.
My flattery is the only
Go
thing that made it.
Check it out. Appreciate it very much. And continue to... Oh, so I'll just quickly say the reason why we wrote this article. I don't think I said it on the air last week. The last Maple Leafs home game that was about 2 weeks ago was my last game as the in-arena host because I was filling in for Danielle Emmanuel. So if you've been to any Leafs games over the last 6 years, she's been the in-arena host.
Mm-hmm.
She had a baby early in the fall. So that's why I got this opportunity and why I was doing both. And now Danielle's back. As of tomorrow, which is exciting. It's
she hasn't made her debut yet?
No. Nope.
Or her re-debut?
No.
Her return, I guess?
I have passed the mic over to her. So that's why we wrote this article, because it was kind of like the finale of that journey. But I'll still be doing some stuff with them, hosting out of the arena events.
Yeah, you still get that cup ring.
I'm still around. But yes, that's it. If you see me at Maple Leafs games, won't be doing the in-arena hosting, but I'll be around. So that's that article. Thanks. Sports.
Let's do it.
Yesterday we came in here guns blazing, fired up about the Fred VanVleet comments, which just continued to get bigger and bigger yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And we put some money down on the money down.
Did we?
Well, we predicted or tried to guess what Fred VanVleet's fine would be.
I like that. Put some money down on the money down.
Hell yeah.
I don't know where we netted out there. I definitely
went over. You said 100,000, and I said between 25 and 50, so
it
was pretty close. I said 25. So NBA announced last night that Freddie's fined $30,000 for his public criticism of Ben Taylor,
mm-hmm.
which we played the clips, and I'm sure it won't be difficult to find if you're listening. Then he obviously had an opportunity to speak with reporters again yesterday, and he was steadfast in his feelings, and he had probably had an opportunity, maybe was told, okay, you know, we don't go on the podium and rip referees to shreds, but also you're not going to back down from, you know, your thoughts and your stance. And he did just that. So we have some comments. Here's Freddie reflecting on Wednesday evening. And if, you know, now a day removed, where he's feeling.
You know, obviously I was frustrated, you know, emotional, but there's a lot of people that feel that way. And, you know, hopefully going forward, we see some, you know, change for the better for the game. You know what I'm saying? It's really just about the betterment of the game. And, you know, it was a little emotional, like I said, a tough loss and things not going our way. So got caught up in the moment a little bit, but it came out authentic. It came out, you know, in real time. You know, I wouldn't have done that if I felt like I had another option or outlet. I felt like I've exhausted my options, you know, this season, many different occasions. And, You know, it was just one of those things. I'm human, you know, and you'll see me make mistakes in real time and make things that, you know, is not always perfect, a little unprofessional from my standard. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but it happened. You know, you got to live and learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be too like negative on Fred here, but the start of that, the betterment of the game, like you're not some sort of white knight here. You're not going to fix the problems that plagues the NBA. You were a frustrated player who played badly and you cost yourself a little bit of money. I will say the most important thing, I think this is cowardice on the NBA's part. Like maybe it's just me because my confirmation bias, $100,000 is what I thought.
I think there's a maximum amount of money you can fine a player. I did take a look at that.
That's I guess,
important
like, context.
Here, take $1 million.
But why wouldn't you now? You've now opened the door. This was bad. You named him by name. You said what you said. Mm-hmm. It was direct. It was honest. It was pretty brutal if you are that person to probably have heard that. It was as far as you could go in on someone who is in charge of the integrity of the game. Like, they were real. Like, real comments, mm-hmm. bad look on the NBA to have someone feeling this and saying this. It opens the door, though. It is a drop in the bucket, as we talked about. Even if it was 100 grand, it really doesn't matter all that much. But $30,000, that's no deterrent. That's not a deterrent at all. If you are upset as an NBA player, why would you not take this route? If you really want to get off something off your chest,
for $30,000,
you're not going to get penalized that much. It might not be like a cup of coffee, but it might be buying like your coworkers coffee. It might be four coffees when you look at the grand scheme of things. Tim Reynolds, I believe, of the Associated Press tweeted this out yesterday. The $30,000 is about 5 to 5.5 minutes of on-court action for Fred VanVleet over the course of an 82-game season. $5,000 per bad word used, and the fine cost him less than what Dwayne Dedman lost for knocking a massage gun onto the court. I don't know if that's inadvertent or he did that on purpose, but either way, he got good value. He said a lot and lost very, very little.
100%.
And I don't know why this sets it. I think this sets a dangerous precedent because I'm looking at that. If I'm a little pissed off, if I'm a little aggrieved as an NBA player, mm-hmm. I come out and I go by name because I know I can only lose $30,000 because that's how much Fred lost.
I think if this continues, though, it's not just going to be $30,000 fine, $30,000 fine. I think
if it gets out of control, they'll have to do something. Okay, but you said there's maximum allowable.
Why that can change.
And this is like, okay, so there's criticism of the officials. Like, I thought they were brutal tonight. People say that.
Yeah.
That's a fine, I guess. But you can say the name of the official. You can use all the expletives in the book. You can be direct and like absolutely crucify someone. And it's only going to be 30 grand. I feel like the NBA made a mistake with this. I don't know if maybe their hands were tied a little bit, but Fred, I think, got off real easy for what he did. Like, that was stop you in your tracks type of commentary. And it's, again, a couple cups of coffee for Fred.
Well, already players have been asked around the NBA about comments like this. Marcus Smart specifically yesterday had some comments about what Fred had to say after Wednesday's game. Maybe this changes your perspective on if guys are just going to feel like they've got free reign or not.
I don't know if you guys seen Fred VanVleet's interview. That's all I'm going to say. Obviously, it lets you know that I'm not speaking out of my butt, and I'm not the only one that feels that way. So I'm going to let Fred do all the talking for me. I mean, I've had my 9 years. I definitely had that where I felt officials had personal vendetta. They're humans, too. You know, they have bad days just like we do. So, you know, it's only fair to notice and understand and have empathy in the fact that, you know, sometimes they're going to let their emotions get the best of them and make calls and judgment calls the way that they officiate. It happens. You know, as players, we just want that consistency. You know, just like for us, you know, we get emotional too. But for us, we get in trouble for it. And we just want that consistency around and that, you know. And that's it. So I've had that in the past, you know, but like I said, up until this year, I'm going to let Fred do all my talking for her on that.
Can you get fined for co-signing?
I don't know. I see. That's like, a smart way around it.
I feel that exact way, but I'm not going to say it.
But there you go. They can just say what Fred said.
Mm-hmm. I'm just here so I don't get fined.
That's
just
exactly
like,
that.
What did Fred say? Yeah, that's
just
how
go listen to Fred's interview.
Just go
listen to the podium on Wednesday.
Yeah, Fred just change the official's name. That's exactly how
insert this guy. Well, I mean, I don't know specifically if I'm in the same boat about this now opening up the door for more guys to feel like they can just get off with every curse word in the book. I do think it probably will happen a couple more times, but I got to think if the NBA sees that this is a pattern and now everyone feels like they're invincible, they just got to pay $30K to call someone out, I feel like they would make some sort of change.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a Fred rule this summer or something moving forward.
Like, you got the rest of the season, and officiating clearly has been a conversation across the league, not just here in Toronto, maybe a little bit heightened here because we like to complain on our Toronto Raptors team. They feels like sometimes more heightened than any other team. But you've got players from around the NBA saying that this has been something that they've focused on or had impact their play. So maybe the rest of the season you see a little bit more. But if it gets out of hand, I got to think that they'd make some rules about saying an official's name on the podium and 17 F-bombs.
Yeah, and I guess it's not just about the fines, because like, I'm not going to be campaigning for, you know, less money in the pockets of players. Like, I don't really care about that. I do care about solutions. I think Fred was a little bit more about himself than anyone else, to be honest, the other night. I thought it was like he came in with a little grudge, and then his preconceived notions took over rather than Ben Taylor's necessarily took over. Mm-hmm. But I think they do have to look into, especially if this continues, the personal vendettas, the personal issues that seem to be growing. It's really, like, it's not surprising. These guys are in each other's faces all the time. There's so many things to dispute in an NBA game. There are no helmets. They're right in each, like, they're just as close and upfront as any sport is going to be with officials. The interaction, there's no barrier at all. Like, there are going to be issues over time that are built and built and built. But you got to make sure that you're doing everything you can as a league to crack down on, hey, personal vendettas, issues between player and referee, just trying to solve that problem. You can't solve the problem. You can massage it the best of your ability. And maybe they're not doing enough to like address the issue of, hey, these two don't like each other. And it's impossible for that not to influence what happens on the court, because everything is subjective. Everything is really emotional. And just that's the situation that they're in, and they're continue to put in time and time again. You're never going to fix it, but it's something they definitely have to be monitoring.
Two texts in here on the text line. Alex from Hamilton says, maybe the league identified an issue with the officiating as well. Hopefully this actually starts a conversation that needs to happen.
That's a great point. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're Scott Foster, like, why would you not be evaluated for that? You could find out exactly what Scottie Barnes said. And then you could probably find out 10 other examples maybe mm-hmm. in that game of where something similar is said. And
NBA not wanting to admit that there's an issue with their league. Like,
it's certainly like that's not going to happen out in the open, because again, you're right, that opens the door for that. But if these conversations are not happening behind closed doors, then they're not doing their job, right? They're not evaluating the officials that they need in a way that they need to. And the same way that Scottie Barnes was punished, if Scott Foster did something he shouldn't have in that moment, again, we don't exactly know for sure, he should be punished in his own way too. Not in game, not out for the public to like mm-hmm. to adjudicate themselves, but there should be some sort of penalty that way as well.
Last one here, Matt in Dundalk. If the NBA doesn't want players to bash their refs, maybe they should look into fixing that issue. That refs have way too much say in the outcomes of games. This league is a joke when it comes to the refing.
It's just it's unavoidable though. Like, they're going to have an impact on the game.
Just like umps in baseball.
Yeah, they are woven through it. Mm-hmm. They are so important. You cannot have a basketball game without officials. You can't have even a run of play without officials being crucial to that moment and crucial to the game. They're involved. They're part of it. They just got to do their jobs better.
Best case scenario is that this brings a lot of light onto it, and maybe refs get nervous that they're going to get called out on the podium, and so they dial it in a bit. Raptors are back in action tonight, taking on the Lakers at 10:30 p.m., and that's on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Similar records here. Raptors 32-35, Lakers 32-34. I don't believe there's any injury on Toronto's roster, feeling like we're going in, but obviously LeBron on the other side.
Certainly. I mean, if you're looking at the strengths of the team, the Raptors should be the healthier team just because mm-hmm. LeBron's not there. But the LeBron-less Lakers have been playing pretty well lately. So this is definitely no pushover. You want to get one of those victories out of the Crypto.com arena.
Ugh. All right. Toronto Maple Leafs, big game tomorrow night. They're back on home ice after a little bit of a lengthy West Coast tour during a trade deadline. The Edmonton Oilers head into town, 7 p.m. puck drop. And that's the Matthews versus McDavid showdown. Matthews may be getting a little bit of a positive boost from Tuesday night's game where he got that
The Dictionary of Ailish has exuberation.
The exuberation on Austin Matthews' face when he scored that goal. I don't know if that gives you a little boost of confidence that he's on the right direction, but, you know, McDavid is currently just doing things that we haven't seen in hockey in a very, very, very long time. Hot ticket this Saturday night.
Definitely. And a big game, I think, most importantly for Austin Matthews. Yeah, obviously, Connor McDavid is going to lead the marquee. He's going to have many of the headlines, but he's going to have a co-share of those headlines with Austin Matthews because this is how this game is generally built. McDavid versus Matthews. Unfortunately, last time, McDavid won in a landslide. It's a big night, I think, for Austin Matthews because I'm sure he's heard the whispers after he himself did not perform even close to the standard that McDavid has kept basically the entire season in their last head-to-head meeting. And now there's an opportunity to respond. Now it's not, it's as much as it will be build an individual rivalry. It's more important what happens with the teams. But I think if you're a Leaf fan, the most important thing is, hey, does he show up here? Because we're asking the question and have been asking the question, is Austin Matthews going to be at his best when it matters the most? This Saturday night, tomorrow, that's not when it matters the most, but you'd think there would be a little impetus there, reason for him to want his to raise his level. That's built into the playoffs, and I don't think it has to be manufactured for Saturday. Like, I think he's going to be motivated. I think he should be motivated to try and perform and sort of not close the gap, but at least you know, prove that he was on equal footing or even ahead, and he was ahead last year for a reason. I think it's a big night for Austin Matthews. It's a big night for the Maple Leafs. It's one of few games left in the schedule that I think you have circled, and it's always fun when McDavid rolls through town.
It is a marquee matchup, I would say, this Saturday, especially because about 2 weeks ago, that was when that head-to-head happened, and you're right, we were left with a lot of questions about will this core four be able to do it? And just one showing against the best of the world, Connor McDavid, who's obviously playing with a little bit of something to prove this season, and he's doing it. We started that road trip, I believe it was with that game, or it was middle of that road trip, but it was a bit of a rough one, like a slumpy feeling with his Maple Leafs and the core four. So a bounce back opportunity, bounce back, but a show it moment on Saturday night. But I think that the conversation is McDavid is just so far ahead of Austin Matthews now. Last year, Austin Matthews was the league MVP. And I don't know if this is just a simple answer, but McDavid's maybe one of the best athletes in sports right now. Like, performing at the highest level in professional sports right now.
Yeah, like, Austin, I had a Hart Trophy vote. I voted for Austin Matthews, number one, over McDavid last year. He clearly outperformed him if you want to value goal scoring and all that. But the special thing about Connor McDavid and why you can compare him cross sports is he does it every single year. There are blips on many hockey resumes where one season you shoot into a different stratosphere. It's on Matthews to repeat all that. Like, a lot of the conversation you couch it this year with, like, oh, he's going to score 40 goals. That's not a bad season, but maybe that's who he is. Maybe he's 40 goals every year and 90 points every year. But just last year, he had that one outlier season where it was 60 and I think 100 plus or whatever it ended up being. So McDavid is the one guy in the NHL who's proven that every year he does special things. Austin Matthews trying to prove that he can do that for multiple seasons. As for the league or the cross sport comparisons, I think without question that he's the most dominant player in the four major sports right now. I think the only one who could maybe challenge that, and maybe there's two, Shohei Ohtani, just because he does both.
He's like generational talent.
But it's more like he's just like a unicorn.
Exactly.
Like, he's not like this, he's not the McDavid of pitching. And he's not the McDavid of batting.
He's in his own world.
He just does things really, really well. But I think the one that you can compare is Patrick Mahomes. not that like he, not that Patrick Mahomes blows everyone on the water every year in terms of like production, but Patrick Mahomes wins every time. When push comes to shove, he generally comes out ahead.
On an ankle sprain and all.
It doesn't really matter, right? Like he just came off an MVP season. So I think like Mahomes would be my closest. Otani is hard to compare, but in terms of like overall impact, I guess you could put him in that conversation as well. Is there anyone else for you?
I mean, those two are definitely the top of the leaderboard. I mean, could you go someone in the NBA?
I was thinking that, but I don't think so. I don't think someone outperforms in the NBA everybody else like McDavid does in the NHL.
I think that's a great text line question at 590-590. Is that what you're seeing? Is Connor McDavid the best athlete in professional sports right now? In the context of his game.
And in context to comparing himself to everybody else, the others that do it, his mm-hmm. contemporaries, how much different he is than everyone else who also plays that sport.
We'll check through those and read them out. But I like the head-to-head, Matthews and McDavid. I'm sure everybody's tuning into this one. Historically, this is our 16th matchup against each other. Matthews has 10 goals to McDavid's 7,
mm-hmm.
but assist-wise, Matthews with 4, McDavid with 15. So blows him away in that regard. So 22 points to 14. So
just quickly before we move on, the Oilers are hot too. The Oilers beat the Bruins in regulation last night.
Yeah.
McDavid didn't have a point.
And it was a comeback too. Like
a comeback, third period. They now won 4 of 5.
He did get hit. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't know. You were probably sleeping.
He kind of like ran into Derek Ryan. It was weird. It looked like almost like a bone bruise, you know, when you get a Charlie horse. Mm-hmm. But it was lower. It was kind of in his shin, like knee area. But
that's not good.
I know. I was watching. And imagine you're Derek Ryan. Yeah,
you just want to disappear.
Yeah. Anyway, something to keep an eye on. I don't think that he is in the injury report. He did leave for a little bit, but just that would actually suck.
Hopefully the Saturday night is what we expect it to be, which is Matthews versus McDavid and not Matthews versus Derek Ryan.
I hope not. Okay, so we also watched Full Swing episode 3 and 4, which was great timing because we are in the middle of the players, day 2 of the players.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so fired up about my guy, Keith Mitchell. And as soon as we talked about him on the radio, he got to his head real quick. But we're doing all right in our little pool, our FanX cup here that we're amidst. But we'll get to some more golf picks at 8:30. You can send those in at 590-590 as well if you got any picks for today.
You got golf picks for today?
Somebody will.
Okay.
Somebody will. Okay, so we did watch episode 3 and 4 of Full Swing. So this is a Netflix series. We did a rundown of episodes 1 and 2. I believe it was last week, mm-hmm. early in the week. So here we are with episode 3 and 4. Episode 4 was, everyone was teeing it up. It was going to be the best one. It was so much fun.
I had a blast watching that episode. I think people built it up a little too much for me. You want to start with 4?
Well, no, let's go in order. So okay. Number 3, Money or Legacy, that's Ian Poulter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a snooze
fest. Man, that was boring.
Money or Legacy, that's an interesting title.
But and you know what? I was surprised that's it. I mean, he's been around. Legacy mm-hmm. can also be time, not just like winning. He is iconic in his fashion. And I think he's well liked and thinks like he's got the little like funniness to him.
Mm-hmm.
But that episode was so boring.
Yeah, they try. They're like, wow, we got a personality here.
They thought
they
did.
Let's profile him for an entire episode. I was like, yeah.
And I don't know if there's a sympathetic feeling at the end that he did it for his family. And I think that's obviously like the way the narrative of this episode was that, you know, this guy, he sometimes went to tournament and came home empty-handed. And it was like, he gets on his private plane winning. And they show, like, tournament winnings, and it's a $0 sign. I'm like, buddy, he's fine. He flies home privately across the country, across the continent, to his beautiful home with, like, these manicured greens.
On the English countryside. Like, take me there.
With his 4 kids who are doing pretty well for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole narrative is that even if you're not one of the best of the best of the best, you know, you still want to set yourself up for success. You go over to live and you're going to get paid guaranteed money to help your family. And that was the like selling point of this episode. And I was like, all right, sure. Like I could have had that hour back.
Yeah, I think I could have had that hour back too. I think you do say like, okay, the sympathy thing, they're trying. I did like my ears perked up a little bit when they said, okay, $33 million in career earnings. that's a lot of money, mm-hmm. clearly.
Well, but then you know what else? Reference to someone else and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, well, definitely. And he's been grinding for what, 20 years? Yeah. 20 years, $33 million. It's not like, okay, what does that average out to? That's a little over a million revenue per mm-hmm. year. But guess what adds up? Private jets add up.
Like, his lifestyle is not cheap. I'm telling you, he's not frugal. So, yes.
Yeah, he might not be stinking rich. You know what I mean? So, like, maybe there's some of the reason, right? Like,
but that's where I felt a little, I was like, okay, I get it. Like, I get why you went to live.
I definitely get why. And that's really the crux of the episode, I think. It's the other side of the live thing, and which is the less interesting side of the live thing. Like, the Brooks thing was interesting.
Yeah.
It's a guy who's like, he can't win here. And he can't handle it. Mm-hmm. Psychologically,
the pressure.
He can't handle the fact that he cannot win and he knows it, so he's doing something about it. This was just the normal live thing, which is the washed up golfer who sees the writing on the wall, mm-hmm. sees the money that's available, knows he could be on the PGA Tour for a couple more years, but would be booking private planes and winning no money more often than not. And how fun is that? Probably not all that fun.
Well, you could see and his emotions mm-hmm. when he's flying home after missing the cut and missed it by one shot and was like, this is the worst feeling.
It would suck.
It is probably
it would suck to get on, you know, the Fred Van Vliet fine cost that you got to pay to fly home private after
being
winning
away
nothing.
For 5 days from your family and he's got young kids. So I do think they did a little bit in giving me the family side of why you would choose to go to live. I thought it was interesting that they showed some of that podium stuff, but then didn't really dig into, all right, like, how are the players actually responding to the human rights allegations and what they're learning about Saudi Arabia? And they just showed the Phil Mickelson and the three guys up on the podium who laugh after that reporter's question, which is an intense question outlining all the reasons why this country has major issues. And they are all like, like they were stunned to have that question asked them. It was like, did you not think that the reporters were going to do their job as journalists and ask you the tough questions? And they didn't seem like they were media ready for it. And I think they were all worried about saying the wrong thing.
And even Phil was ready for it. And what he said, it was just like, oh, you didn't nail that, dude.
No.
You definitely didn't nail that.
And then they show the first event and there was, what, 20 people watching them play golf? And I was like, isn't that a little sad? Like, you just went from, what tournament was he at?
I think it was the U.S. Open.
Yeah, he goes from the U.S. Open and joins Liv, and it was like...
Oh, no, he didn't make the U.S. Open. No, he did. He didn't make the Masters. It was the U.S. Open.
It was like 20 people watching, and I thought, I wonder how that feels for them. Like, it's just a financial decision now, and like, are you enjoying golf as much? Didn't look like it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was episode 3. Maybe I did get more from it than
just,
I wanted.
Just quickly, because the sympathetic figure thing, it was like the Ryder... Oh, it's the Ryder Cup this?
Yeah, he's like, I want to be the captain of the Ryder Cup.
Like, I get that you want to be that, and he's made his legend, I suppose, at the Ryder Cup. But you can also walk away knowing that you never got beat head-to-head in Ryder Cup. You are a Ryder Cup legend.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
So you don't get to captain the team. It's $50 million guaranteed or being the Ryder Cup captain, living this life where you're wasting money, booking private jets and not making anything and going home to your family empty-handed, or being the Ryder Cup captain once. Like, a pretty easy decision, I think, that he gets to make. But more proof that he would have been okay after. Because you still get to do that. He still could have been a TV analyst. He could have done all these different things.
Yeah. He's got personality in that sense.
But he still wants to play golf. And he still wants to make money. And Liv provided that. The best part of the episode, quickly, the oven mitts he was wearing between shots early on the golf course. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, on the golf course.
He's wearing these big...
To keep his hands warm.
The biggest gloves I've ever seen. I was like, what is going on there? How have I never seen that? That was the best part of the episode.
It makes sense. And I was like... Because they looked like they were golfing in some cold weather. Some toques and
I guess you want to keep
flannels.
Your hands warm, but those things were massive.
It was like a mascot's hands.
Yeah.
It's like if you put on Carlton the Bear's outfit.
It's like Carlton the Bear, but he's going to the Arctic Circle. That's what those gloves were.
Okay, episode 4, though. Oh, my God. Just go watch that one. Imposter Syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Is that the title of it?
Yeah. Have we all not felt that way at times?
Of course.
Everyone told me that I was going to love Damon after this. Like, people were like, if you're going to watch Full Swing, you'll love this guy. I love this guy.
Do you? I don't know if I love him.
I think it was amazing. It was so
fun. I like his caddy better.
Yeah. Anyway, he's just like, the reason why is, you know, everyone knows someone like this, right? I think I'm sometimes like this too. I felt some similarities. It's like, you sell yourself short.
You were like that with your athletic article.
And you're your toughest critic, and that's him. And he is talented, but... The best line was, someone's got to be the 70th best golfer in the world. And I thought, you know what? Like, I felt a lot of parallels to players I played with, teammates, times in my life where, you know, you're just not believing in yourself, but you have the talent. And then to watch him lead at the U.S. Open after having to climb his way there, the qualifying, like the story was the perfect. They chose the perfect week to follow him. Like, how do you script that out any better? Mm-hmm. The guy is not even going to go to the play-in. He goes to the play-in. He's seven shots out of even making it. He stops at the turn, crushes a couple White Claws, mm-hmm. gets back out there, shoots one of the best rounds, like five under, makes his way into the U.S. Open. That weekend is leading the U.S. Open on Sunday, tied for first, falls out and ends up tied for 10th. But just the journey of this guy, and like, I also, you find out more about him as a person and what he's had to deal with. And so it kind of makes more sense, like why he maybe has gone through a lot and views himself in the way he does. But I thought it was a great episode.
Mm-hmm.
The best so far.
I think I like the Brooks one the most, or at least like I was more captivated by it. I will say on the White Claws, a couple drinks helps any golf round.
Yeah,
so I'm not, like, not surprising at all.
Buddy, it's...
But I like
it's like
that.
When you play beer pong, you got to warm up a bit.
Exactly. Everything's a little bit, it's relatable, right? It's relatable.
Yeah.
The commoner can relate to Joel Damon for sure. Like, I don't know, in my athletic experience, my best friend growing up, I played hockey with all the way up. He was the stud. He was the star. And I just like being his buddy. Mm. Like, I just like being the guy that played with him. Like, it was great. I loved being in that role. And I think Damon, maybe if it's compared to Homa, he likes being in that role where he's pretty good too, but
yeah. He's
not the star. But I think imposter syndrome is an important story to tell here. And I think the caddy story important to tell here, because if you're going to a general audience, the caddy player relationship is something you might not understand. But wow, is it important?
I think
they picked the right duo to go in on this, because some of them are very like professional and they don't even like each other.
Relationship,
exactly.
Right?
This was a real friendship, and this is, I think, the more meaningful relationship and definitely the one to tell. But just on imposter syndrome, like, I think it's a massive, massive thing in the PGA. And I think Damon might be the most extreme like example of like someone who really doesn't think he belongs, but does. And he's like, I know I belong, but I don't really.
And then when
he's probably looking around like, when does this end?
Yeah, when he was belonging and those scenes where he's with the best of the best, you almost felt like he was like looking around thinking, is this happening? And mm-hmm. then there was opportunities for him to speak about himself, and you felt like he was learning a bit. Maybe if I do believe in myself.
But he was also so self-aware that like he knows they're going to ask him these questions that he doesn't want to ask.
There's a lot of hesitance in just believing in himself.
Exactly.
And for me, it was nice to see that journey where at the end I felt as though he really maybe learned from this experience about, if I trust myself and I go in there thinking I can play with the best, I certainly can. And that was like the way that the article or the journalists were also talking mm-hmm. in this episode, saying he can hang with the best when he believes in himself. So maybe it's just a nice message to believe in yourself.
And an important storyline, because I think self-belief, I think we see it every single weekend in the PGA. Like, I think it partly explains, imposter syndrome does, when you get to like the final pairing and there's one Kurt Kitayama and there's one Rory McIlroy. Mm-hmm. The McIlroy wins 90% of the time, partly because they're Rory McIlroy, but also partly is because the other player understands that they're playing Rory McIlroy, right? Like, these guys are all special, but the ones that are special are the ones that know and understand and believe in how special they are. Every single weekend, like, this will happen probably this weekend, there'll be one guy, there'll be a Nick Taylor in the final pairing, mm-hmm. there'll be a Kurt Kitayama in the final pairing. More, that person will have less of the pressure on them, less of the cameras on them, and more often than not, they will lose, partly because they're not quite as good, but partly because they're looking around like, can I handle this situation right now? Can I handle being in a final pairing with Rory McIlroy? Most of the time, the answer is no, and they got to prove it to themselves first. And I think that might have been part of Damon's story at the U.S. Open, where he was like, I'm leading all of a sudden. Then he has a bad Saturday because I know I'm at the top of the leaderboard and it's getting to crunch time. He did, you know, he comes top 10. It's a massive payday. That's all great. But I feel like the belief in yourself is one of the most important traits on the PGA Tour. And I thought this episode underscored that.
And I think it's something you can't prepare for until you're in that moment on Sunday, because you can't replicate or you can't create an environment where you're up against Rory and Rahm and the top of the top until you're in it. So you can do all the, you know, mental fitness training that is provided now.
But you can't simulate.
Strength, like putting yourself in visualization, and I've done all of those things. But once you're in the moment, it's make or break, and I think that you kind of, you can separate the people that have it and that don't have it. But that also gives you the opportunity next time you're in that situation where you might be in a top 10 at a major.
You'll be more comfortable.
You'll be more comfortable. So I'm hoping that that's the way in which his journey goes. I thought it was really, really awesome, the relationship between him and the caddy, as you mentioned, and the human side of that. Like, he faced cancer and he beat cancer, mm-hmm. which is something that I think he as he admits, he holds a lot, and it's been something that he struggled with, and you saw with the cancer hat he's wearing, and his, obviously his mother passing. So you learn a lot about the player, and I think that's what I wanted from this series, is to learn about the players themselves. And I think that was maybe him and Brooks were the best representations of what goes on in a golfer's mind, because it's got to be one of the most difficult sports mentally. Maybe most difficult sport mentally.
It's the most difficult thing for a weekend warrior mentally. It's just dealing, like, it is all in your head. You have to, like, what, 98% of a golf round is thinking about the shot as opposed to executing the shot. I think it was a good insight definitely into the brain of a golfer, that episode for sure, in addition to the Brooks one. One more on that, though, and it might be something that just interested me. Mm-hmm. But how about the life of a golf journalist? I think it was Daniel Rappaport,
yes.
I think, who works at Barstool now. He was just like chilling on the course during a practice round with Damon.
Yeah.
And he's like,
hey, buddy, you're actually good.
Yeah,
you're great.
Like, imagine doing that. Like, what is the I've done the hockey journalist life. Like, you get shepherded in, like, your cattle into the dressing room, and you get all into a scrum and you listen to someone talk for about 2 minutes and then you're out of there. This guy gets to just walk the course on a practice round with a guy like Joel Damon. That
pretty
access
cool
is unbelievable. That is very cool.
Wait, wasn't that during the U.S. Open play-in? Or is that...
No.
That was a practice round?
I think it was
round?
A practice round for the U.S. Open.
Wow.
So imagine the access. Like, if you're just fully credentialed, you can just... Yeah, I'll just tail... I'll tail Tiger today, and maybe he'll interact with me a little bit, and I'll write a story after about spending 4 hours with Tiger Woods, or at least adjacent to Tiger Woods. Pretty awesome.
So we'll do the next two episodes, which are called American Dreams. Tensions between the PGA and LIV Golf reach new heights as Matt Fitzpatrick and Dustin Johnson face off at the U.S. Open. That's going to be a good one. And then Don't Get Bitter, Get Better, episode 6. Tony Finau and Colin Morikawa take different approaches to the game heading into Masters Tournament and the Open Championship.
I heard that one's a little rough.
What do you mean by that? Not good?
Morikawa is not the most exciting person in the world.
Maybe we learn something.
Maybe we will.
And then
I mean, I've been happy with all four of them, to be honest. Like, Poulter was not, you know.
That was the only one that I was like, okay.
It wasn't my favorite thing in the world, but it wasn't a waste of time for me.
So confirmed, a second season will be coming out as well, of Full Swing. Who do you want to see? What do you want to learn? If you fully watched this series already, and if you're still left wanting, they're going to do another whole season of it.
And they won't be able to lean on the LIV thing as much. But, I mean, there's new things coming to golf this year. Mm-hmm. John Rahm has already, like, dominated the first stretch of play. Maybe a little bit more insight on, like, you know, what it's like when a player is dominating. Like, a story on John Rahm just being John Rahm for the last month, that'd be worth an episode for me.
I think so. Not sure the direction of that yet. We're going to finish out our Full Swing reviews over the next 2 weeks. Today's guest, though, let me just tell you, are we not in for a treat? Charles Davis, baby, 7 a.m.
He's back.
It's been a long, dark, cold month without him. We're going to talk about that quarterback carousel. He was also at the Combine, where some incredible numbers are coming out. Anthony Richardson is just putting on a performance. Charles was there. And then yesterday I got a chance to talk to Russell Martin, former Blue Jay. He's currently with Team Canada at the WBC. And we talked about Jose Bautista's level of excellence. And then we're going to wrap it up with Nick Kyprios at 8 a.m. to tee up this weekend, Matthews versus McDavid. You can send in your wake and rake picks at 590-590. We're looking for a bounce back here from one half of the show.
Three straight trapdoors for yours truly. It's difficult.
Let's bring the Good Friday vibes, Justin.
We'll try.
Okay. A-list on the other side of the break.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
A Rodgers has announced his next move.
What did I miss?
Not related to his football career, however. He is going to broaden his horizon in his professional life and be a featured guest speaker at a massive, massive conference in June.
Mm. Less speaking, I think, would be a good thing.
The conference is called Psychedelic Science 2023. It is a massive psychedelic conference.
I suppose, yeah.
And it is almost $1,000 to attend for the three-day package. You get to see Aaron Rodgers as one of these marquee speakers about psychedelics and science. And
now, are people on psychedelics? Well,
I actually don't know. I don't know. Maybe
probably
that's
pretty important.
You get a goodie bag at the door. You get a swag bag, yeah. And there's like shrooms in there.
That swag bag would be an interesting one. But I'm sure, like, listen, if you're selling product legally.
Pushing product.
If you're pushing product, if you want people to try your product and they're going to the Aaron Rodgers concert, they're going to the Aaron Rodgers conference, you'd put a little sample in there for sure. I'm sure the swag bag is exactly what those psychedelics want.
It's dubbed the largest psychedelic gathering in history, expecting over 10,000 attendees with speeches, workshops, and panel discussions about all things hallucinogenic.
There have been more than 10,000 people on psychedelics in an area previous to this.
Isn't that what like Burning Man's all about?
Exactly, like any like festival. You've seen Tomorrowland? Like,
I've seen Tomorrowland.
Yeah, I think there's more than 10,000 there.
Well, hot ticket item. We won't be giving those away on the show.
No.
Today's code word is... What's that? Athabasca? What is it?
Ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca. Yeah. That's today's code word. If you can spell it, you get
the spell. Yeah, the attempt to spell ayahuasca, I think, would be adventurous. God.
All right. This is going to make you feel bad about yourself. An Australian fitness fanatic, an Aussie bro, just set the Guinness World Record for most pull-ups in 24 hours. I can think of a billion things I'd rather do with my life than do 24 hours of
pull-ups. Well, how about
pull-ups.
This? My roommate in university.
No.
Years after we had moved out.
Okay.
But still, he's my buddy. Went to his bachelor party in the summer.
We could figure out who this is
he
then.
He set the world record, Guinness World Record, for burpees.
He did not.
Day. I don't know what the number was, but he was live streaming. It has since been broken, probably multiple times.
Oh, that's okay.
But he once set the record for burpees.
How?
And you're watching, like late in the day watching. Like I wasn't like tracking, but like
not consecutive. Like he took some breaks. It's just completed in 24 hours.
I don't
know
if it was consecutive or
not. Is this guy insane?
He's okay. So at his bachelor party, he was wearing a weighted vest the entire time.
You're kidding.
And the punishments were like, hey, do 10 chin-ups on the monkey bars over there. Like he's
jacked.
He's a fitness freak and he's a firefighter and he lives that life. But he set a record at one point.
No,
we'll look it up in the
way.
Break for burpees in a day or consecutively, one of the two. But by the end, like the burpees were so sloppy. It was like, actually,
were they
hilarious.
Still counting them?
Hilarious to watch. No, they were legit. They were like, and you know how burpees, you're supposed to touch your chest to the floor.
I hate
some people
burpees.
Don't do it, right?
No,
some people just go
do
down.
The cheap one for sure.
He would be. It wasn't just like chest touching floor.
The whole body.
It was like my full body weight on the
right.
ground for a second and then up. And they were bad by the end, but he's a monster, a monster.
Why have we never talked to this guy on the show?
I don't know.
Get him on for
maybe he's
this summer for the Wake and Rake.
Shout
and
out to Chili.
Chili, baby. Welcome.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most exciting story you've ever told,
Sorry,
Justin.
What were the chin-ups?
I don't
what
even care
record?
Anymore.
No, what was the record?
Okay, so guess. 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
2,400? You think 24 hours. You think he did 2,400
I don't know.
Chin-ups? 8,008 chin-ups in 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
That's disgusting.
If I had 24 hours, I don't know how many I could do. It might not be triple digits, though. And that's 8,000.
No, I couldn't get to.
Like if you did 24 hours spaced out, every hour you did, you squeaked out 10.
Oh, then I could do that.
Then you could do it.
Yeah.
But it would be hard by the end. Really hard by the end.
Yeah, it's hard at the beginning, too.
You'd be like doing one at a time every 20 minutes.
He did 8 months of training, and he got it. 8,008 chin-ups. Congratulations. And he raised funds for every $1 of pull-ups he raised. For every one pull-up he raised, $1 at least, at a minimum. That was his goal. So anyway, I'm going to go home and eat chips after the show, so that's great.
And max out on 3 chin-ups, that's maybe. Right.
God. This guy could be at the NFL Combine if he wanted to be, because they're setting some crazy records there, Anthony Richardson and co. We're going to talk to Charles Davis, bestie, on the other side of the break on the Fan Morning Show.